Welcome to Thriving with Arthritis, the podcast that empowers you to live a better life despite all the challenges of arthritis and autoimmune diseases. Whether you're newly diagnosed or have been living with arthritis for many years, this podcast is here to support you every step of the way. Let's begin. Today, I'm going to talk about a topic that affects many people all around the world. There is actually an approximation that about 60 million in the world, they live with this disease. And once you have an episode of this type of arthritis, you will always remember. Why? Because it's so painful. Many people will compare this episode with giving birth or something very painful. In fact, when people get diagnosed with this type of arthritis, it's like the tip of the iceberg. Because after you get diagnosed with this disease, you're going to find out many times that you carry other chronic conditions. Today, we're going to talk about gout. And I'm very honored to have here today with us a specialist in gout, someone that treats this disease every single day, Dr. Dada. Dr. Dada, welcome to our show.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate you inviting me to your show. It's a pleasure to be here. I love your show and I love your show and just what you're doing for patients dealing with rheumatologic conditions. Really appreciate the work that you do.
You have a trajectory in your life very similar to mine. You were born in Cincinnati, Ohio, but then you were raised in Lagos, Nigeria, and you earned your medical degree from the University of Lagos in Nigeria, then returned to the United States for further medical training, and she completed her internal medicine residency at the University of Pittsburgh, and she also pursued a fellowship in rheumatology at the University of Washington in Seattle. By the way, I lived in Pittsburgh for years and a half. So that's why I said we have a very common trajectory. And Dr. Dada wears a lot of hats. She is a fellow of American College of Rheumatology. She is very active in promoting women's health and promoting women's in rheumatology. She is also a speaker for the Arthritis Foundation, and she's the chairperson of the Association of Women in Rheumatology. And she's also the leading force behind a practice called Overlake Arthritis and Osteoporosis Center. Thank you for accepting my invitation.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here and excited to share our knowledge and just go back and forth about our topic of the day.
Our topic of the day, as I said, is gout. I would like you, if you can, to share a story of one of your patients that you recently diagnosed with gout.
So just to let my audience know, so I have a clinic called Overlake Arthritis and Osteoporosis Center, and we actually do have a gout clinic, and it's in the greater Seattle area, specifically in Bellevue, Washington. So if anybody's listening, ring us up. We have a team ready to help you. So the other day, I'll tell you actually about 2 days ago, I had a patient that knew that he had gout. So he came in, I've had gout for 10 years. It bothers me intermittently. And I take a bottle full of Advil and I just take it down. And that's how I get rid of gout. As rheumatologists, we have problems with that. So I was just getting his information, right? And I was looking through his lab tests. And I was like, you don't have hypertension. You don't have diabetes. You don't have a family history of kidney disease. Why are your kidney tests abnormal? And the only reason we could find is because he has been self-treating his gout with ibuprofen and Aleve. He says, I just take a bottle of Aleve and I take care of it. So that bottle of Aleve does take care of gout, but it's putting his kidneys at high risk. So his kidney test is abnormal for someone who's in his 40s, otherwise healthy, exercises, does all the good things, but his kidney test is abnormal because of the Aleve. So we changed his plan. I said, do not touch Aleve again. Thank you very much. We came in, so we're like, we're not doing that anymore. I took care of the acute pain he had, and then we talked about the long-term strategy. So many ways to take care of the acute pain. We could do a shot, we could do pills of steroids, we could do colchicine, and a lot of tools that we have to get rid of his pain. So he was happy we got rid of his pain, that I took away his bottle of Aleve forever. No more touching that. And so I'm hoping that his kidneys are going to recover if he stops using the leave. And then I talked to him about the long-term plan, right? This is a plan for you long-term. We're going to do allopurinol, lots of medication options, lots of tests to make sure that, I told him, I said, we're going to quantify your disease. We're going to get x-rays. We're going to do blood tests, see what medications are going to work for you. And then we did a dual energy CT scan just to quantify how much gout he has. So he's on a great trajectory. His pain is gone. I think he's on a cruise right now. But I took away his leave, but gave him some prednisone if he needed it on the boat.
That's very good that you mentioned that, because for many patients it's very confusing how to treat gout. But what I did find out is that for many doctors it's confusing when to treat gout and how to treat it. What do you think is that?
I think that primary care doctors have a lot on their plate. Right. And I think that they remember vaguely that there's a potpourri of medications that you use to treat gout. Maybe some prednisone, maybe some colchicine, maybe a little allopurinol. There's a potpourri of medication. And sometimes they may forget in what it's a very formulaic way to treat gout. And sometimes they mix up the formula because they don't do that every day, right? They have a lot on their plate and sometimes they just don't do it and they just want to get rid of the patient's acute pain. So I think that's part of it, is that they've forgotten the formula because they're busy and they don't do this every day. We do it every day. So I think that's probably, I would say, they know the general idea, but gout, unfortunately, is very specific in how you should treat it.
So when do you think a patient needs the long-term treatment for gout?
I think certain things should happen. One, if you're having frequent, recurrent painful attacks, then it needs to be prevented because it's impacting your quality of life. And each attack is probably making your joint damage worse. So that's one. Multiple attacks. So if a patient has 3 attacks in a year, I think it's time to take action. 2, if the person has kidney stones. 3, if we do x-rays or we do this scan of the legs and we find out that there's a lot of damage, then it's time to take action, right? Or if they have lumps and these lumps are accumulation of tophi, whether it's in the ears, in the elbows, on the knees, if your doctor examines and say, what's this lump here? That lump is probably means that you have so much gout that it's now caused lumps in outside your joints, right? And that is very destructive. So those are typically the reasons why you want to treat a gout attack. Multiple attacks, evidence of damage, or evidence of excess accumulation called tophi.
Have you ever had a patient with so-called gout, but they actually had another type of arthritis? Because what I find is that many patients, they do think they have gout, but in fact, when they come to us, we do find out about other diagnoses.
Yeah. So there's another diagnosis similar to gout called pseudo-gout. And correct. So pseudo-gout can present exactly like gout. It loves the joint, small joints. It presents like a hammer smashed you on the toe. So it has that same gout presentation. Gout, as we know, is because you have uric acid crystals in the joint because your body can't get rid of it fast enough. But pseudogout is calcium crystals in the joints. So as far as your body is concerned, they're crystals, they don't belong there. And so your body has the same reaction. So it looks like gout, which is why it has the name pseudogout. It doesn't get treated like gout because it's a calcium problem, not a uric acid problem.
Very good. Thank you for making that distinction. I actually found out a few patients with psoriatic arthritis that were misdiagnosed with gout for many years and were treated for gout, but they didn't respond to the treatment. So that's another common mistake that I find is done in the medical community.
Interesting.
Now, I'll ask you something. In our medical community, we debate the role of lifestyle, including the way that we eat, how we are living our lives. Do you think that our lifestyle has any impact in causing gout, worsening gout, or preventing gout?
I think our lifestyle definitely has a huge impact, right? Even weight for weight, right? 200 years ago, we are much bigger than the humans of 200 years ago, a few generations ago, right? Our body has evolved over time to be able to adapt to the hunter-gatherer lifestyle. We do not have that anymore. So it's not necessarily a disease of overindulgence. It's just that our body cannot really process the uric acid that we're producing just from living. Now, there are definitely things in the lifestyle that we may be doing to make a bad situation worse. So there's certain things in life that I think they definitely impact what we do. And I can just say a few things that I tell people to do. Hydration is so important. And then there's a slew of rules that I give my gout patients. If you have gout, this is the way you live. But definitely lifestyle, and I would say it's general, it's not even just specific to one person, is evolutionary, right? As human beings developed more ability to subspecialize and be less hunter-gatherer, where we're not starving and then we finally catch a rabbit to eat at the end of the week, we are able to eat 3 square meals a day. And our body has not evolved as quickly as we have, right? So we've lost an enzyme that we had tons ago, but we don't have that enzyme anymore. So it's not your fault that you have gout, but we could certainly be making a bad situation worse.
Correct. As I tell my patients, there might be a genetic component, but when you add on that genetic component with certain foods, certain medications, because as you probably advise your patients, medication and taking too much medication of certain sort can precipitate or can cause a gout attack.
I totally agree with you, is that with medication, sometimes people read online that, oh, the water pill can cause gout. And I would suggest that the water pill can make a bad situation worse. But you don't just stop your water pill without talking to your cardiologist or your primary care doctor, right? So you work with your doctor, say, okay, this water pill may be causing my gout or making my gout worse. Are there alternatives? But I see a lot of people just stopping it. They read it, say, aha, I found it. That crazy doctor put me on this medicine. And then they stop it. There are alternatives and there are ways to work around it. But we don't want you just stopping your blood pressure medicine or your water pill.
I love that you said that, because many people that I see, they read online and they think the information that they find online is very valuable or written by a physician, which is not. Most of the time, the information that you're going to find is written by someone that maybe consulted with someone from the medical field, but that is not always a specialist in gout. And like you said, I hear patients stopping medication, changing medication, asking to change medication, or just replacing medication with supplements, certain supplements that the neighbor said it worked for them or their friend said that it worked for them. That's not always a good idea. So I wanted to share with you and my audience that because I have seen so many things and because I know that people are interested to live a healthy life and to change things in their life, I'm going to publish a book in September that will bridge this information, the traditional medicine and how we traditionally treat gout with our lifestyle choices. And I'm going to talk about nutrition and how nutrition is going to increase the risk of gout attacks or increase the risk of developing gout. But also when you have gout, because there is the big dilemma in our community, when you have gout, there are certain foods that will precipitate a gout attack. And our patients will tell us about that. We as physicians, we are trained and our medical guidelines, they say that we should conditionally, and I underline that, conditionally recommend nutrition because it's not enough evidence. But there is evidence that if you bridge those two worlds, the traditional medicine with the lifestyle medicine, you're going to have greater effects. So that's going to be my book. I also included in that book a meal plan, and we included more than 100 recipes that were carefully selected for people that have gout.
I love it. That is, oh my goodness, that is so needed in our community. I think our patients need this. Thank you so much for doing this for our patients. I can't wait to see 100 recipes. Wow. Well done. I'm looking forward to reading that. And yeah, and I'm going to be requesting a whole bunch of copies because I'm going to need that for my patients in our waiting room. Thank you so much for that.
Same. So talking about that, do you counsel your patients about diet, and what kind of changes do you recommend for your patients?
Yes, I do think that diet is a big part of managing gout long-term, right? So even before we start talking about medications, once the patient is pain-free and they can actually have the bandwidth to listen, usually on our second visit, we start talking about what's your diet like, right? And so when I identify things like beer, I talk to them about what's the role of alcohol, right? And we say, okay, beer is the most notorious culprit. Spirits are second, and wine is third, right? So if you must drink, then you know what is most likely to precipitate your gout, but there's also a quantity part of it, right? So I said wine is least likely, but it's not water. So water is what we encourage. But if you're in a social event and you're trying to make a decision, then I would say hydration, and then deciding which one is least likely. But again, it's still a risk, right? Alcoholic beverages, high fructose corn syrup. Well, we shouldn't be eating that anyway. But that's something. And you just have to look at the packages of what you're eating, because you'd be surprised it's almost in everything. So when you look at packages, and if you're shopping outside the aisle of the grocery store, you're probably going to be fine. When you get to the core middle, you find a lot of things in boxes. You have to read the label. So that's high fructose corn syrup. You want to avoid that. The other thing is shellfish. Now, I live in the Pacific Northwest. And nobody's excited when I start talking about that, but I have a story for them. I worked in the VA. Our guys used to go fishing and clamming. So they'll get clams and crabs and shrimps, and they'll wash it down with beer. And Monday morning was gout clinic. So I tell them, stay away from shellfish, and then stay away from organ meats. Now, I love organ meats, but usually when I say that, they're like, I got that already. I don't eat that anyway. But I think most of us from different ethnicities, all the innards. So most people are not worried about the liver, the kidney, all that stuff, heart, all that stuff. Those are really packed. And then if you're overweight, then gradual weight loss. Even in the process of weight loss, you have to talk with your doctor, because even that process can potentially aggravate your gout. But once you get to steady state, you may even get to where you've lost so much weight, you know, if you have the weight to lose, that you may not even need your gout medications anymore. Because I've had patients who've been successful. This was somebody who had an extra 100 pounds, but 5 pounds of weight loss probably is not really going to make a big difference. But at some losing 100 pounds, if you had 100 pounds to lose, you're almost a new person. Your whole metabolism kind of changes. So that, I have a couple of people who've successfully lost, but they were about 100 pounds overweight, right? But most people are not 100 pounds. So when they say, if I lose 5 pounds, will that make a big difference? Really not. Good, healthy changes, but that small amount of weight loss probably doesn't make that much of a difference on your uric acid level.
Thank you. A lot of patients will look at the value of the uric acid and they guide their approach based on that value. What do you counsel your patients? How important is that value of the uric acid for you when you assess a patient with gout?
Yeah, so it's helpful information, right? Unfortunately, about 15 to 20% of people, when they're having that acute gout, that uric acid level can go low. And so it gives false sense. Yeah. So it gives you that false sense. So sometimes, and sorry, that is maybe why sometimes your doctor makes a misdiagnosis, because you come in, they say it looks like gout. Let's check your uric acid. Comes back low and they're like, it's not gout. So it could still be gout, because during that acute episode, that uric acid can be falsely low. So checking your uric acid when you're not having an attack is the way to test. So it's a very helpful test, but we still have people with borderline uric acid that still have gout anyway. And so getting those x-rays and scans of your legs, and maybe even taking some fluid out of your joints, are ways that we can diagnose gout, but still, even despite the fact that the uric acid level may not be perfectly aligned for the diagnosis.
And even patients with high uric acid, but they don't have gout, they are also confused. They ask, why am I not treated for gout? because you don't have it. What do you say to those patients that they never had a gout attack, but their uric acid is high?
Yeah. So the recommendations on treating uric acid, if you don't have uric acid accumulation either in your joints or they haven't, or in your kidneys or lumps of tophi or damage, if you just have high uric acid but no arthritis and no kidney stones, then your uric acid typically should not be treated. We do have concerns that high uric acid may be associated with inflammation. So we do all the other things. Maybe we'll do some, maybe then that's where diet and lifestyle probably has the best impact, because we don't think that high uric acid is particularly helpful or healthful. So I think that's where, you know, the diet plan in your book is going to come in very handy, especially the pre-gout people, pre-attack people. When you're like, hey, your uric acid is high, what do you do about it? Then there are things I think we could do, and with some guidance would really help patients. So this is another reason why your book is really going to be a bestseller.
Thank you so much. Now, we are going to wrap up this discussion, and I want you to share a couple of your thoughts with patients that are suffering from gout.
So I tell people, if you have gout, for a rheumatologist, so come from our standpoint, right? For your rheumatologist, gout is one of the most satisfying things to treat. There is a formula. We follow the formula and you will be pain-free. We can easily get you to where you're just getting blood tests like twice a year, you're having no attacks, and your joints are not damaged, right? That is a very easy, simple thing that your rheumatologist can do with you, like within a couple of visits, right? And so there's medication that can help. One, if you don't have attacks and your uric acid level's high, there are healthy things that you can do. Diet, there are books coming out that's going to be helpful. If you have attacks of gout, then don't try to treat it by yourself. Don't use the over-the-counter anti-inflammatory medications, because people have actually had kidney failure from using long-term ibuprofen anti-inflammatory medications to treat their gout. And do you know what else? Of course, nobody wants kidney failure, but you know the crazy thing? After the kidneys are damaged, gout gets worse, because you can't now even excrete what you were capable of excreting before. So not only do you now have bad kidneys, you also now have worse gout. So do not use over-the-counter anti-inflammatory medications to treat your gout. Diet is important. Try to use the resources, because that works hand in hand with medication. But if you have a lot of gout attacks, or you have tophi, or you have kidney stones, time to reach out to your doctor. If you're in the Pacific Northwest, reach out to Dr. Dada. And then try to reach out to your doctor so that we can just get you to where your joints are healthy and we can prevent joint damage.
Wonderful, very good thoughts and very powerful message for patients with gout. Dr. Dada, you are a wealth of resources and we appreciate your time, but we also have to be very conscientious of your time. If people need you, where do they find you?
If people need me, if you're in the Pacific Northwest, look us up at Overlake Arthritis. We're in the Bellevue area. We do have, just like you, a YouTube channel called Healthy Joints, Healthy Life. So follow us for lots of hints, including ideas on gout. And then we're also on Facebook. If you look at Dr. Aminola Dada, you can follow me, because I always have thoughts of the day, all kinds of interesting information, basically things to help you live the healthiest version of yourself. So I help people with joint pain become pain-free, and people with autoimmune disease get their immune system back on track. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you. And for those of you that are here to watch this, we would like to thank you for taking your time to educate yourself and empower yourself to live a healthier and better life with gout and other types of arthritis and autoimmune diseases. Thank you for joining Thriving with Arthritis podcast. If you find today's episode valuable, please subscribe. Consider to leave us a review, as your feedback helps us improve and reach out to more people like you. Remember, you are not alone in your journey with arthritis and autoimmune diseases. Together, we can learn, grow, thrive, and not just survive. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we will dive deeper into more topics that will matter to you. Until then, keep thriving.